When the lights go out, they speak. The vanished, the cursed, the cruel. Their echoes live here. I'm Raven Vale, and you've just crossed the threshold. Welcome to Whispers from the Dark. Whispers from the Dark. Digital doppelgangers, who owns your identity in the age of AI? By Raven Vale. There was a time when people feared mirrors, not because of vanity, because of what might stare back. In ancient folklore, a reflection was not simply an image, not the passive bouncing of light off a polished surface. A reflection was a doorway, a duplicate, a second self that existed in the space between the real and the impossible. In German legend, the doppelganger was a specific kind of horror. Not a monster. Not a demon. Something more intimate and more disturbing. A perfect double of a living person, walking the world without permission, wearing your face, moving with your gestures, existing in spaces you had never been, doing things you had never done. To see your doppelganger was an omen, a signal that the boundary separating you from your copy had become permeable, that whatever stood on the other side was now loose in the world. Tonight, we no longer fear mirrors. We have learned to build what the old legends only imagined. A perfect replica of your face, generated from photographs you posted without thinking about consequences you could not have anticipated. A flawless clone of your voice, synthesized from recordings you made in other contexts for other purposes, now capable of saying anything. A digital version of you, thinking, speaking, emoting, responding, placed in situations you were never in, saying words you never said to audiences who have no reason to doubt what they are seeing. In the age of artificial intelligence, we have learned how to replicate the human form. Not physically. The body is still singular, still bounded by skin and mortality. But digitally, the old boundaries no longer hold. The question is no longer whether we can build your double. It is who owns what is created, who controls where your double goes, what happens to you when your copy speaks and the world listens. This is Whispers from the Dark. The first double. Long before algorithms existed, humanity feared duplication. The anxiety runs deeper than any single culture. It appears across civilizations that had no contact with each other, emerging from the same intuition. That identity is singular, that each person is irreducibly one, and that anything suggesting otherwise is a violation of the natural order. Many early cultures believed that capturing someone's image removed something essential from them. Not metaphorically, literally. The image was not a representation. It was a fragment of being, extracted and made separate. When photography arrived in the 19th century, this fear surfaced with new urgency. The camera was not understood as a machine that bounced light onto treated paper. It was experienced as something that looked at you and took something with it when it looked away. In parts of Eastern Europe, folklore warned that to see your doppelganger, your precise double, moving through the world without your consent, was a premonition of death. Not a death you could avoid. Your double was the announcement. The double represented fragmentation, the terrifying possibility that identity could be split, that the body and the essence could be separated. That what looked like you didn't have to be you. Today, we create doubles intentionally. We upload our photographs to platforms whose terms of service we scroll past without reading. We record our voices in videos, podcasts, social media clips. We archive our opinions, our mannerisms, our patterns of humor and anger and affection across platforms that store everything and forget nothing. Our data becomes raw material. Artificial intelligence learns from it, learns the shape of our faces, the quality of our voices, the behavioral patterns that make each of us recognizable and therefore replicable. The digital double is no longer legend. It is software. It is infrastructure. It is, increasingly, business. Your voice is no longer yours. There is something about voice that goes deeper than information. When you hear someone speak, you receive the words, but you also receive everything surrounding them. The specific timbre shaped by bone and tissue and a lifetime of particular use. The rhythm of speech, the cadence of pauses, the way breath interrupts certain syllables, the emotional coloring that makes a human voice something entirely different from a series of phonemes in sequence. Voice meant presence. If you heard someone speak, they were there. AI voice cloning has dismantled that entirely. Modern synthesis tools can replicate the tone, cadence, breath pattern, and emotional inflection of a specific person's voice from as little as a few minutes of recorded audio. Not an approximation. A replication precise enough to fool the people who know that voice best. Family members, long-time colleagues, people who have been listening to it for years. A few samples, a few sentences. That is all it takes. From that material, your voice can be made to say anything, to confess to crimes you didn't commit, to endorse products you have never seen, to declare positions you do not hold, to make promises you never made to people who will hold you to them. The voice, once the most intimate proof of your presence, becomes separable from you, becomes a tool that others can pick up and use. When voice becomes replicable, authenticity fractures in ways that are difficult to overstate. How do you trust a phone call from someone you love when the technology to fake it is freely available? What happens in a courtroom when recorded audio is no longer reliable evidence? What happens when a parent receives a call in their child's voice, panicked, in distress, asking for help, and cannot be certain the voice is real? These are not hypothetical scenarios. They are happening now. The line between origin and imitation is dissolving, and identity, which we assumed was anchored in the body and the voice, is beginning to blur. The face that isn't yours. Deepfake technology has accelerated at a rate that makes even the people building it uncomfortable. The word deepfake entered common usage only in the late 2000s. Within a few years, the technology had moved from a novelty requiring specialized expertise to a widely accessible capability anyone with a consumer-grade computer could use. With sufficient imagery, and the internet provides sufficient imagery of almost any public figure and many private ones, AI systems can generate hyper-realistic video of a person saying things they never said, going places they never went, doing things they never did, smiling at people they have never met, speaking words composed by someone else, appearing in contexts constructed entirely from data points rather than from reality. Political manipulation becomes straightforward. A fabricated video of a politician distributed through channels that move faster than fact-checking can reach the people who need correction before correction arrives. reputations become fragile in entirely new ways, because reputation was historically anchored in what you actually said and did. Now it must also contend with what a convincing simulation of you says and does. But beyond the obvious malicious applications lies something stranger and more philosophically disturbing. The question of consent. If you have posted photographs of your face on a public platform, as most people have, can those images be used to train AI models without your permission? If your face appears in public spaces, captured by cameras you did not choose, and archived in databases you do not know about, does it become public property? Who owns your image? The platform that stored it? The developer who trained on it? The data broker who sold it? Or you? The person whose face it actually is, who was never asked? Legal systems are racing to answer questions that philosophy never anticipated. But the technology is not waiting for the law to catch up. It is accelerating. The soul in the machine. The occult traditions of many cultures shared a specific fear, not dramatic possession. The spinning head, the supernatural voice. Something quieter and more disturbing. The belief that a fragment of a person's essential self could be captured and used. That the soul was not safely contained within the body, but could be extracted through image, through name, through intimate knowledge of a person's patterns and vulnerabilities. Now consider what a sufficiently trained AI model knows about you. A model trained on years of your public writing knows your characteristic sentence structures, your recurring concerns, your emotional register across different contexts. It can simulate your reasoning process with accuracy that surprises even people who know you well. A model trained on recordings of your voice knows its acoustic signature in your most private emotional states, the way it changes when you are frightened, uncertain, or genuinely delighted. A model trained on video of your face knows the micro expressions that cross it in fractions of a second, the ones you do not control and may not know you make. If an AI avatar can mimic your personality convincingly enough that people who know you cannot distinguish the simulation from you, where does you actually end? Philosophers have argued for centuries about what constitutes the self, whether it is the continuity of consciousness, the body, the memories, the pattern of behavior across time. AI is forcing that debate out of the seminar room and into the world. If your behavioral data predicts your reactions with near-perfect accuracy, if the model can anticipate what you would say, how you would respond, what you would find funny or offensive, does that mean yourself is an algorithm waiting to be reverse-engineered? Or is there something irreducible? Something that lives in the body and the unrepeatable texture of a particular life that cannot be captured in data points? The question is no longer theoretical. We are running the experiment. Digital immortality. There are companies operating right now whose business model is the reconstruction of the dead, not metaphorically. Interactive systems, chatbots, voice simulations, visual avatars, trained on the data a person generated across their lifetime, designed to continue producing responses in that person's style after the person is no longer alive to generate them. The pitch is comfort. Grief is among the most disorienting experiences a human being can have. The sudden absence of a voice you knew, a presence you relied on. Digital resurrection technology offers the possibility of extending that presence, allowing a bereaved parent to continue receiving messages in their child's voice, or a grieving spouse to continue having conversations with someone who is no longer there. The intention, in most cases, is genuinely compassionate. The implications are genuinely disturbing. When a family interacts daily with a digital replica of someone they loved, questions arise that have no comfortable answers. Is the comfort real? Is the healing genuine? Or is the system keeping them in proximity to something that simulates presence without allowing grief to resolve into acceptance? Who owns the digital remains of a person who never consented to be reconstructed? If you spend years creating content online, and that content is used after your death to build a simulation of you, did you agree to that? Does anyone have the right to consent on your behalf? And at what point does a simulation of a dead person stop being a tribute to who they were and become something else? A product, a property, an entity serving the interests of whoever controls it, rather than the memory of the person it was built from? We once feared ghosts. Now we are learning how to manufacture them. And the instructions are available to anyone willing to pay the subscription fee. The economy of identity. Identity has always had value. But for most of human history, that value was not extractable. Your face, your voice, your personality, these were yours because they were inseparable from your body, and your body was the only vessel they could inhabit. Value without extractability meant that identity, whatever else it was not a commodity. That has changed. Your face now trains facial recognition models that are deployed in airports, in retail stores, in public spaces, often without your knowledge, and almost always without your meaningful consent. The training dataset does not require your permission. It requires only your image. And your image exists in enormous quantities on the internet, in the cloud, in archives belonging to companies whose privacy policies you accepted without reading. Your voice trains speech synthesis systems. Your browsing behavior trains predictive algorithms that model your decision-making with increasing precision. Your written output trains language models learning to replicate the patterns of human thought. Data brokers collect fragments of your digital life from dozens of sources, combine them, and sell the resulting profiles to buyers you will never know, and for purposes you will never be told. These profiles are not anonymous clusters of behavioral data. They are detailed, specific reflections of real individuals, including you. You are not just a user of these systems. You are contributing to systems that may eventually replicate you. Not maliciously, not through the deliberate intent of any single bad actor, but structurally, as a byproduct of participating in digital life in the 21st century. Your identity becomes training material, and once a model has been trained on who you are, what it produces no longer belongs solely to you, if it belongs to you at all. The loss of singularity. For most of human history, identity was singular. One body, one voice, one consciousness moving through time in a single, continuous thread. Whatever else was uncertain about the self, and philosophers have always found plenty to argue about, at least the singularity seemed secure. You were one. You occupied one place at one time. You could not be in two rooms at once. AI has fractured that singularity. A single person can now exist in multiple forms simultaneously. forms that operate independently of the original, without requiring the original's ongoing involvement or even awareness. A live human. A pre-recorded avatar answering questions in real time. A cloned voice handling customer service calls for a company. A digital likeness licensed for use in advertisements, appearing on screens in cities the person has never visited. And after death, the avatar may persist indefinitely, continuing to speak, continuing to be experienced as present, long after the body that generated it has stopped existing. The singular self becomes distributed, fragmented, persistent in ways the original self never chose and cannot recall. Is that empowerment? In some ways, perhaps. The ability to extend your presence, to reach more people, to remain available after death. These have an obvious appeal, particularly for artists, educators, public figures who spent their lives building audiences. But consider the other side. When there are multiple versions of you operating independently in the world, which one is the authentic one? When your cloned voice is having a conversation with a customer and saying things you did not script and would not have said, who is responsible for what it says? When your likeness appears in an advertisement promoting something you find objectionable, whose name is on that endorsement? The singular self was not just a metaphysical convenience, it was the foundation of accountability. You said what you said. You did what you did. The chain of responsibility ran from act to actor without ambiguity. Distributed identity breaks that chain, and without the chain, responsibility dissolves into a question no one is positioned to answer. Consent in the shadows. One of the most unsettling features of digital duplication is its invisibility. You do not receive a notification when your photographs are scraped from a platform and added to a training dataset. There is no moment of ceremony, no transaction you are aware of making, no point at which you are asked. Would you like your face to become part of a system that will use it to generate images of other faces? The scraping happens in the background. The training happens in data centers you will never see. The model that emerges may be used for purposes that have nothing to do with you. And yet, it carries something of you within it. Some pattern derived from your specific likeness that has now been abstracted into someone else's system. You never see the moment your identity becomes raw material. You never witness the training phase. You only encounter the result, if you encounter it at all. A voice eerily similar to yours used in a commercial. A face uncannily like yours generated in an image you stumble across online. An avatar that shares your mannerisms deployed in a context you would never have chosen. The process is silent. And silence, in matters of identity, amplifies unease in a way that explicit violation somehow does not. An explicit theft announces itself. You know what happened. You can name it, confront it, seek remedy. But the silent appropriation of your digital likeness asks you to feel violated by something you cannot point to specifically. Something that may have begun years ago with a photograph you no longer remember posting. The terms of service said you agreed. Did you? Not in any meaningful sense that the word agreement has historically implied. You did not read what you agreed to. You were not presented with a genuine choice. Accept or lose access to platforms that have become essential infrastructure for modern social and professional life. The agreement was a legal formality, not a genuine exchange of informed consent. And yet it was sufficient. The scraping was legal. The training was legal. The model that carries something derived from your likeness is, in most jurisdictions, legal property. Your sense of violation is real. Your legal standing to address it is, in most places, limited. That gap between what feels like an obvious wrong and what the law currently recognizes as one is where most people who encounter this issue find themselves standing, with no clear path forward. Modern possession. In ancient stories, possession meant loss of control, a spirit entering the body, speaking through the vessel of a person who had not consented, who could not prevent it, who might not even be aware it was happening. The possessed person remained, in some form, but their voice was no longer theirs. Their actions were no longer theirs. The impression they left on the world was being shaped by something else, entirely. Now imagine this. Someone builds a deepfake of you spreading health misinformation. Your face, your voice, your recognized identity. Reaching thousands of people who believe what they are seeing because they recognize you. You did not act. You did not speak. You were not present. But your likeness was. Or someone uses a voice clone of you to authorize a financial transaction you never made. Or your digital double is deployed in a political campaign for a candidate you oppose. Or a manipulated video of you circulates through the communities you belong to, damaging relationships you spent years building. The body remains innocent. The image acts independently. Your reputation, which exists not in you but in the minds of the people who know you, is shaped by actions you didn't take, in contexts you never entered, through a version of yourself you never authorized. Is that not a modern form of possession? Not supernatural, not requiring a ritual or a belief in spirits, simply technological. The ghost in the machine may not be a spirit. It may be you, or something wearing you so convincingly that the distinction stops mattering. The fragile future of trust. Trust has always relied on verification, eye contact, voice recognition, physical presence, the specific embodied reality of a person in front of you who can be tested, questioned, and confirmed through the accumulated weight of sensory evidence. These were not foolproof. People have always deceived each other. But the friction of deception, the difficulty of successfully impersonating another person at close range over an extended period, provided a baseline of reliability that social and legal systems were built around. AI disrupts that baseline entirely. When faces can be fabricated frame by frame and voices synthesized in real time, the verification systems that society has operated on for centuries begin to fail. A video call is no longer proof that the person on screen is who they appear to be. A voice on the phone is no longer evidence of presence. A photograph is no longer documentation of an event. New verification systems are emerging in response. Digital watermarks embedded in AI-generated content, biometric authentication that attempts to prove biological presence rather than just visual appearance, blockchain-based signature systems that create traceable records of content provenance. But these systems are in an arms race with the technology they are trying to contain. Each new verification tool generates new research into how to defeat it. Each new authentication system is followed, eventually, by tools designed to fool it. What happens in the interim, in the long period during which detection lags behind generation, is a steady erosion of confidence in the digital record. When nothing digital can be trusted with certainty, the cost is not merely practical, it is social. Trust is the invisible infrastructure that everything else runs on. Commerce, governance, relationships, the accumulation of collective knowledge about what actually happened in the world. Erode trust in the medium through which most of human life is now communicated, recorded, and shared. And what erodes with it is the foundation. Who owns you? Ownership is a legal concept. It has defined boundaries, enforcement mechanisms, and centuries of precedent that allow courts to resolve disputes about who possesses what. Identity is a personal concept. It has no legal filing, no registration number, no document that establishes your claim to the specific configuration of face and voice and personality that makes you recognizably you. We have never needed those things because the claim seemed obvious. You are you. Your face is yours. No one could use your voice without your body present to produce it. That assumption no longer holds. And where law and identity collide in the age of AI, neither framework is adequate for the questions being asked. If a company trains a model on your public speech, writings, interviews, recordings you made available on the platforms you chose, does the synthetic voice that model produces belong to them? They built the system. They ran the training. They own the servers. But the raw material it learned from was yours. If a film studio licenses your likeness for a movie, do they retain the right to resurrect a digital version of you in a sequel made after your death, in a story you never read, speaking dialogue you never approved, aging or de-aging your face as their creative vision requires? Several living actors have faced this question. Several estates of dead ones are facing it now. If a productivity software company trains a voice assistant on your archived recordings, does the voice that responds to millions of users daily belong to you, or to the software provider whose product it powers? The law is beginning to grapple with these questions. Some jurisdictions have passed legislation granting people explicit rights over their digital likeness. Some platform terms of service have been updated to clarify, or, more often, to obscure in legal language, how user-generated content can be used for AI training. But the pace of legal adaptation is measured in years. The pace of technological development is measured in months. In the gap between them, the digital versions of real people multiply without clear rules, governing who is responsible for what they say, who profits from their existence, and who can shut them down. The question of who owns your digital self is not rhetorical. It is the central legal and ethical dispute of the coming decade. And right now, for most people in most places, the answer is not you. The human residue. Despite the precision of AI replication, something remains. Not always. Not in every domain. But often enough to notice. A quality that the model reaches for and cannot quite grasp. That lives in the space between the data points rather than within them. A hesitation at a particular moment that is entirely characteristic and entirely unpredictable from prior patterns. A micro-expression that occurs not because the emotional state that generates it has been logged and learned, but because the person is having a specific experience in a specific unrepeatable moment. A decision that contradicts everything in the behavioral record. Not because the model failed to capture the data accurately, but because the person changed, as people do, in ways that their prior behavior could not have predicted. A joke that lands because of something about the timing. Not the linguistic structure, not the subject matter, but the precise calibration of human attention that chooses this moment and not another to be funny. AI can replicate pattern with extraordinary fidelity. The question is whether pattern is everything, whether consciousness, the experience of being a specific self in a specific moment, aware of the present in a way that is not reducible to processing inputs and generating outputs, can be captured in data points and reproduced in silicon. Philosophers and neuroscientists have different views on this question, and the disagreement is genuine and unresolved. But perhaps what the widespread anxiety about digital doppelgangers reveals is not primarily a technical question. It is a hope. The hope that identity is more than data. More than pattern. More than the replicable output of a system that could, in principle, be reverse-engineered from sufficient observations. The hope that somewhere beneath the code, beneath the training data, and the model weights and the generated outputs, there remains something uncopyable. Something that can only be in one place at one time. Something that is irreducibly, stubbornly, irreplaceably you. Not because the technology hasn't tried, but because some things are not made of data. They are made of living, of the specific, unrepeatable experience of being this person, in this body, having these particular encounters with the world that no dataset could have predicted and no model could fully reconstruct. Whether that is comforting or merely hopeful is a question each of us will have to sit with. But the fact that we feel the need to ask it, that we instinctively resist the idea of being reducible, may itself be part of the answer. The future double. The next decade will accelerate everything we have discussed tonight. AI avatars will host shows, presenting content to audiences who understand, at some level, that the personality they are engaging with is synthetic, but who find that understanding does not significantly diminish the engagement. AI voices will narrate stories, provide companionship, handle the kinds of intimate and ongoing communication that we have historically reserved for people we know personally. AI likenesses will appear in films, in advertising, in interactive experiences designed to create the sense of relationship with a specific person whose physical original is not present and may never have agreed to be. Some of this will happen with consent, with explicit agreements, negotiated compensation, creative collaboration between human originals and the systems that extend their reach. Some will happen without it. Children born today will grow up in a world where the boundary between a person and their digital representation is fluid in ways that will feel, to them, entirely normal, because they will have no memory of a world in which it was otherwise. The philosophical questions that feel urgent to us will feel, to them, like asking whether a telephone call is really the person on the other end. The questions do not go away. They become the background. We are not entering science fiction. We are entering policy debates and legal frameworks and cultural negotiations about what identity means when it can be copied, what authenticity requires when simulation is indistinguishable, and what rights a person holds over the digital versions of themselves that exist and will continue to exist independently of their choices. The doppelganger no longer haunts dark forests or appears at crossroads as an omen of death. It inhabits servers in climate-controlled data centers. It is trained on your data, generated by your patterns, deployed by entities whose interests in your likeness are financial rather than supernatural, and it may be speaking right now, in your voice, to someone who has no reason to doubt it. The ancient world feared mirrors because they suggested there might be more than one of you. Now we know there can be. A digital you. A cloned you. A simulated you. Speaking, responding, existing in spaces your body has never entered, and making impressions your consciousness never chose to make. The final question is not technical. It is not legal. It is not even, at its deepest level, about artificial intelligence at all. The final question is this. If your double speaks, and the world listens, and the world cannot tell the difference, who are you? Are you the body? The one singular physical form that moves through time and will eventually stop? Are you the voice, which can now be extracted and redeployed without the body that originally produced it? Are you the pattern? The behavioral signature that AI systems can learn and reproduce with increasing fidelity? Or are you the consciousness that observes all of this happening? The awareness that cannot be scraped from a database because it is not the kind of thing that leaves a trace a system knows how to collect? Digital doppelgangers are not coming. They are here. And as technology perfects replication, as the copies become more convincing and more numerous and more persistent, we will have to decide, collectively, urgently, and without the luxury of unlimited time, whether identity is something we own, or something that can be borrowed, without asking, without returning, without ever announcing that the borrowing began. This has been Whispers from the Dark. I'm Raven Vale, and somewhere, perhaps already, another version of you is speaking. And you never heard it begin. The door you never knew was open. The voice you never knew was listening. The copy you never knew was made.